because I told him to run. It was me. So I promised my father. I promised. Again, I said, angrier this time. Rizek's responsibility, not yours. Surely your father would understand that. I can't give up on him, Akko said, his voice breaking. I can't. And I can't participate in this ridiculous quest you're on. Not anymore, I snapped. I can't watch you destroy yourself, destroy your life, to save someone who doesn't want to be saved. Someone who is gone and will never come back. Gone? Akos's eyes were wild. What if I had told you that you were beyond hope, huh? I knew the answer to that. I would never have fallen for him. I would never have turned to the renegades for help. My current gift would never have changed. Listen, I said. I have to do this. I know you understand that, even if you can't admit it right now. I need Rizek to be gone. I don't know what else I can say. He shut his eyes for a moment, then turned away. All the others were asleep, even Akos, lying a few feet away from me on the ground near the ships. I, however, was wide awake with only my racing thoughts as company. I propped myself up on my elbow and looked out at the bumps of renegades under blankets, the dying light from the furnace. Jorik was curled in a tight ball, his blankets drawn over his head. Tekka was in a beam of moonlight that turned her blonde hair silver white. I frowned. Just as a few memories began to surface, I saw Sifa Kariseth crossing the room. She slipped out the back door, and before I knew what I was doing, or why, I had shoved my feet into my boots and followed her. She was standing just outside, her clasped hands resting on the small of her back. Hello, she said. We were in a rough part of Voa. All around us were low buildings with flaking paint, windows with bars twisted into decorative patterns to distract from their true purpose, doors hanging off their hinges. The streets were packed dirt instead of stone. Floating among the buildings, though, were dozens of wild fenzu, glowing with Shotet blue. The other colors had been bred out of existence decades ago. Of all the many futures I have seen, this is one of the stranger ones, Sifa said. And the one with the most potential for good and evil in equal measure. You know, I said, it might help if you would just tell me what to do. I can't, because I honestly don't know. We are at a murky place, she said, full of confusing visions. Hundreds of murky futures spread out as far as I can see, so to speak. Only the fates are clear. What's the difference? I said. Fates? Futures? A fate is something that happens no matter what version of the future I see, she said. Your brother would not have wasted his time in trying to evade his fate if he had known that to be true, undoubtedly. But we prefer to keep our work mysterious, at the risk of it being too rigorously controlled. I tried to picture it. Hundreds of twisting paths unfolding in front of me, the same destination at the end of each one. It made my own fate seem even stranger. No matter where I went, and no matter what I did, I would cross the divide. So what? What did it matter? I didn't ask her. Even if I thought she would tell me, she wouldn't. I didn't want to know. The oracles of the planets meet yearly to discuss our visions, Sifa said. We mutually agree on what future is most crucial for each planet. For this planet, my job, my only job, aside from recording visions, is to ensure that Rizek leads Shotet for as little time as possible. I said, even at the expense of your son? I wasn't sure which son I was referring to, Akos or Aija. Maybe both. I am a servant of fate, she said. I do not have the luxury of partiality. The thought brought a chill to my bones. I understood doing things for the greater good in theory, but in practice, I didn't have any interest in it. I had always protected myself, and now I protected Akos when I could. Beyond that, there weren't many I wasn't willing to cast out of my path. And maybe it meant I was evil, but it was true regardless.
It is not easy to be a mother and an oracle, or a wife and an oracle, she said, not sounding quite as steady now as she had before. I have been tempted many times to protect my family at the expense of the greater good. But, she shook her head, I must stay the course. I must have faith.
Or what, I wanted to ask. What was so bad about snatching up your loved ones and fleeing, refusing to shoulder a responsibility you never wanted? I have a question you might be able to answer, I said. Do you know the name Ima Zatzivas? Sifa tilted her head so her thick hair spilled over one shoulder.
I do.
Do you know what her name was before she married Uzul Zatzivas? I said. Was her fate favored?
No,
Sifa said. She took a breath of the cool night air.
Their marriage was a kind of aberration, unlikely enough to register in the Oracle's visions of Xotet. Uzul married far beneath himself, for love, apparently.
A common woman, with a common name.
Ima Sarukta.
Sarukta? It was Tekka's name, and Zosita's. Women of pale hair and bright eyes. That's what I thought, I said. I would stay and talk, but I have something I need to do.
Sifa shook her head. It's strange for me not to know what someone is deciding.
Embrace the uncertainty, I said. If Voa was a wheel, I was walking its circumference. The Zatzivas family lived across the city, their house on a cliff overlooking Voa. I could see the light glittering inside their estate from far off, when the streets were still broken under my feet. The current stream, winding around the sky above me, was deep purple, transitioning to red. It almost looked like blood. Fitting, given our plans for tomorrow. I felt comfortable in the poor, discarded district where the renegades had chosen their safe house. More often than not, the windows were dark, but sometimes I saw shadowed figures hunched over small lanterns. In one house, I spotted a family of four crowded around playing cards scavenged from Zold. They were laughing. There had been a time when I would not have dared to walk these streets as Rizek's sister, but now I was disgraced and no friend of the regime. I was as safe as I could be here. I was less comfortable when I crossed into wealthier territory. Everyone in Voa professed loyalty to the Noavek regime. It wasn't optional. But Rizek kept the oldest and most trusted families in Xotet in a ring around him. I could tell I was in that ring by the buildings alone. They were newer, or patched over and repaired and repainted. The street had turned to stone beneath my feet. There were lights along the way. I saw inside most of the windows, where people in clean, crisp clothes read their screens at the kitchen table or watched the news feed. As soon as I could, I turned toward the cliffs, to one of the paths that would take me up the face. Long ago, the Xotet had carved steps into these cliff walls. They were steep and narrow and poorly maintained, so they weren't for the faint of heart. but I had never once been accused of having that kind of heart. Aching from both yesterday's injuries and my current gift, I kept one hand on the wall to my left, pressing close. I hadn't realized when I left how sore and exhausted my body still was, how every step throbbed in my still-healing throat and scalp. I paused and took out the packet of vials I had taken from Akos's belongings before I left. A line of vials in different colors confronted me. I knew most of them by sight. A sleeping potion, a painkiller, and at the far end, its cork sealed twice with melted wax, the pure red of hushflower extract. In this quantity, at this potency, it was enough to kill a man. I swallowed half a vial of the painkiller, then tucked the packet away in my small satchel. It took an hour of climbing to reach the top. I had to stop several times along the way to rest. The city was smaller every time, its lit windows just blinking lights up here. I could always find Noavek Manor, glowing white near the city's center, and the amphitheater, even now protected by a web of light. Somewhere beneath that amphitheater was Orieva Benezit, waiting to die. When I reached the top, I backed away from the edge as quickly as I could. Just because I wasn't faint of heart didn't mean I enjoyed taunting death. I followed the road to the Zetsivas house, into the forests where they bred Fenzu for export. The path I walked was guarded by metal grates, to keep people from stealing the valuable insects. Draped over the trees were nets to prevent the Fenzu from escaping, more a precaution than anything. Fenzu built their nests around the delicate branches nearest to the sky. The trees themselves were tall and thin, their trunks so dark they looked black, adorned with wiry, dark green clusters instead of the floppy leaves I had seen on other planets. Finally, the Zetsivas house came into view. There was a guard at the gate, but by the time I punched him in the jaw, it was already too late for him to defend himself. I used his limp hand to unlock the gate. I paused there, remembering how my hand hadn't unlocked Rizek's room in Noavek Manor, how my blood, my genes, hadn't unlocked it. And I still didn't know why. Now is not the time. I shook myself out of the daze, continuing on. I didn't think I would encounter any other security. Only Ima lived here now. I had made sure of that, hadn't I? The house was modern, recently renovated from the drafty stone castle that had been there before. Large sections of wall had been replaced with glass, and little orbs full of blue-glowing insects were draped across the trees in front, creating a bright canopy that reflected in the windows. Strange plants twisted together in front of the house, some of them creeping up the remaining stone. Some were blooming, too. Huge flowers from different worlds in colors I rarely saw on ours. Pink as a tongue, rich blue-green, black as space. When I reached the front door, I drew the small current blade sheathed at my hip, just in case. I was almost afraid to break the silence that surrounded me. But then I pounded, hard, with the handle of the knife, until Ima Zetsivas answered. "Miss Noavek," Ima said. She wasn't smiling, for once. She was staring at the weapon in my right hand. "Hello," I said. "Mind if I come in?" I didn't wait for an answer. I stepped into the foyer. The floor was made of wood, likely from the dark trees that surrounded the Zetsivas estate, the same wood used so liberally in Noavek Manor. There were few walls here, the whole first floor bare for me to see, and all the furniture stark white. Ima wore a robe with a pale sheen, and her hair was loose around her shoulders. "Have you come to kill me?" she said, her face placid. "I suppose it's only fitting that you finish what you started. First my husband, then my daughter." I thought about telling her that I had not wanted to kill either of them, that their deaths still haunted me in my dreams, that I heard Uzul's heartbeat before I woke and saw Letty in corners where she had never stood. But there was no reason to say any of those things.
"I just came to talk to you," I said. "The knife is for my protection."
"I didn't think you needed knives," Ema said. "Sometimes they're more efficient," I said. "Subtle intimidation and all that."
"Ah."
Ema turned away.
"Come on, then. Let's sit."
She led the way to the sitting area, which I could see from where I stood, the low couches arranged in a square. She turned on a few lights with a gentle touch, so the couches glowed from beneath, and Fenzu swarmed in a lantern on the low glass table. I didn't sit down until she did, arranging her robe over her legs so they weren't exposed. She was an elegant woman.
"You're looking better than you were last time I saw you," she said. "I can't say I didn't enjoy watching you bleed."
"Yes, I'm sure that was entertaining for quite a few people," I said tartly. "A little harder for you to claim moral superiority when you're thirsting for someone else's blood, though, isn't it?"
"Your crime came first."
"I've never argued that I'm on some kind of high ground with you," I said. "Just that you might be on the low ground with me." Ema laughed, and she was about to aim another insult at me, I was sure, but I spoke over her. "I know my brother disgusts you just as much as I do. I've known for a long time," I said. "And I used to feel bad for you, for having to stay close to him to survive. I used to think you were just desperate and doing what you had to." Ema's face twitched. She looked out one of the expansive windows at Voa, the ocean beyond it visible from this height, though it just looked like emptiness, like the edges of space.
"Used to?" she finally replied.
"Today I began to understand that you're not desperate, at least not in the way I thought. Everything is perfectly in your control, isn't it?" She jerked her head back toward me, suddenly stern. I had gotten her attention.
"You've lost far more than I realized. You lost them before I ever laid a hand on your husband. Sarukta is your name," I said. "Your sister was Zosita Sarukta, who fled the planet after she was caught teaching other languages to her neighbors, and later executed for participating in the revolt. Before she was caught, though, your nephew was killed for her crimes, and your niece, Tekka, lost an eye to my brother."
"The misdeeds of my family are behind me," Ema said, her voice wavering a little.
"You can hardly hold me responsible for them."
"I'm not," I said with a short laugh. "I'm telling you how I know that you are part of the revolt, and have been for quite some time."
"My, you certainly have cooked up a theory, haven't you?" Ema said, and her strange smile returned. "I am on the verge of marrying your brother and solidifying my place as one of the most powerful people in Shotet. I married Uzul Zetsivus as a means to an end. This end, social advancement. I have a skill for it. Something you would not understand, since you were born into privilege."
"Do you want to know what ultimately gave you away?" I said, ignoring her explanation. "First of all, you were the one who turned Uzul in. You knew what my brother would do to him. People who act out of desperation don't make calculated moves like that."
"You..."
she tried to interrupt, but I spoke over her. "Second, you warned me that they were going to frame an innocent person for the renegade attack, knowing that I would do something about it." She scowled.
"First you tell me about the people I've lost, and then you accuse me of bringing about my own sister's execution? How does that make sense?"
"And last," I continued, "all the tapping you do. What is it with you and Tekka and the tapping? It's not even a particularly good pattern." Ema's eyes skirted mine.
"You're a renegade," I said.
That's why, after all that he took from you, you're still able to stand at my brother's side. Because you know you need to be close to him in order to take your revenge. She stood, robe rippling behind her as she moved toward the window. For a long time she was still, a white pillar in the moonlight. Then, at her side, she tapped her first finger against her thumb. 1, 3, 1. 1, 3, 1. The tapping is a message, she said without turning around. Once, my sister and I taught ourselves a song to remember the fates of the family Noavec. She taught it to her daughter, Tekka, as well. She sang it, her voice creaking. The first child of the family Noavec will fall to the family Benazit. I followed her fingers as they found the rhythm again, and her body swayed. The rhythm was 1, 3, 1, 3. Like a dance. I do it, she said, slowly. When I need strength for the task at hand. I sing that song in my head, and I tap out its rhythm. Like at her sister's execution, her fingers on the railing. Like at dinner with my brother. Her hand on his knee. She turned to me. So what? Have you come to get leverage? Do you intend to trade me for your freedom? What? I have to admire your commitment to this game of pretend, I said. You gave over your husband. Usul was sick with Q900X. Several ingredients in the treatment protocol are a violation of our religious principles, Ema snapped. So he sacrificed himself for the cause. I assure you, it was not what I wanted. But as a result of his selflessness, something you clearly know nothing about, I won my place at Rizek's side. My current shadows moved faster, still spurred on by shifts in my emotions. I take it you haven't spoken much to the other renegades, I said. You know they're responsible for saving my life? I've been working with them for a while now. Have you? Ema said, flat, frowning at me. You didn't really think whatever excuse Rizek gave for carving up my face was true, did you? I said. I helped renegades sneak into Noavec Manor to assassinate him, and after the plan failed, I got them out safely. That's how I got arrested. Tekka, your niece, was there. Ema's frown deepened. In this light, the creases in her face were more pronounced. She was lined, not from age. She was still too young for that, prematurely white-haired though she was, but from grief. Now I knew how to account for her constant smile. It was just a mask. Most of the others, Ema sighed. They don't know what I am. Zosita and Tekka were the only ones. This close to my mission's completion, it would have been too much of a risk for me to have any contact with anyone anyway. I stood, joining her at the window. The current stream had already turned a deeper red. Tomorrow the renegades are moving against Rizek, I said. Right before he executes Orieva Benazit, I will challenge him to the arena in such a way that he can't refuse. What? She demanded, sharp. Tomorrow? I nodded. She gave a short laugh, her arms crossed. You foolish child! You think you'll be able to defeat Rizek Noavec in the arena? You really only do think one way, like a trained killer. No. I said. I came to you with a plan. Your role in it would be simple. I reached into the satchel at my side and took a vial from the packet I had brought with me. All you have to do is pour this vial into Rizek's calming tonic in the morning. I assume you'll be at his side when he drinks it. Ema frowned at the vial. How do you know he'll be drinking calming tonic? He always does before he kills someone, I said, so that he can stomach it. She snorted a little. Believe what you want about his character. I don't really care, I said. But he drank it the day he ordered me cut to pieces for the public's enjoyment, and I promise you he will drink it in anticipation of killing Orieva Benazit. And all I'm asking is that you pour this in. Nothing else. If I fail, then your place at his side will still be secure. He has no reason to suspect you. But if you do this, and I succeed in my plan, I'll never even have to lay a hand on him, and you will be able to take your vengeance without having to marry him first. She took the vial, examining it. It was sealed with wax that Akos had taken from my desk. I used it to stamp envelopes with the Noavek symbol, just as my mother and father had.
I'll do it, Ema said.
Good, I said. I trust you'll be careful. I can't afford for you to get caught.
I have been careful with every word and glance since you were a mere child, Ema said. I sincerely hope, Miss Noavek, that you are not doing this for atonement, because you will not get it. Not from me. Not after all that you have done.
Oh, I'm not nearly noble enough for that, I said. For me, it's all about petty revenge. I promise you. Ema sneered at my reflection in the window. I let myself out of her house. I had to move quickly if I wanted to be back at the safe house before the others woke.
Chapter 34. Akos. Syra was ahead of Akos, standing in the sun, a hood up to shield her face. She wore a heavy cloak to disguise the current shadows, her hands buried in long sleeves. Behind her was the amphitheater, where she'd almost lost her life. But to watch her walk with that straight spine, it was like nobody had ever tried to peel her apart. A group of Shotet soldiers stood by the big double doors that led straight to the amphitheater floor. Word on the street, collected by Sovi, who, according to Jorek, knew everyone, was that the soldiers called to appear in the amphitheater today were being rewarded for a good scavenge. Akos didn't know what they were supposed to have brought back that was so worthy of this honor, but it didn't really matter. They were just a ruse anyway. Rizek wanted a crowd to witness Ori's execution. The big double doors opened. Akos squinted into bright light, and the roar of a huge crowd filled his ears. There were so many faces inside that he felt like the entire city was there, though it was more like a fifth of it. And the other four-fifths would watch the live feed on screens around Voa, if they bothered to watch at all. Syra turned back with a glimmer of silver, the sun hitting her now-healed throat. Her chin bobbed up and down in a nod, and then the tide of the crowd carried her away from him. Time to go. So, Issei had come to stand at his shoulder. We never actually determined how we were going to get through the first door. Honestly, I had pretty much decided to just smash the guard's head into the wall, Akos replied. I'm sure that won't draw any attention at all, Issei replied. There's Eyepatch. Let's go. Issei had taken to calling the renegades by nicknames instead of learning their real names. Eyepatch was obviously Tekka, Jorek was Fidget, Geo was the Flirt, and Sovi was the one who doesn't speak Thuvazit, which was long, but she hadn't used it much. It went both ways, though. Akos had caught Tekka referring to Issei as the Haughty One that morning as they all shoved food in their mouths, eyeing the hole Akos's mom had made in the ceiling with her floater. Akos spotted Tekka and Sizi standing near the amphitheater doors and made his way over, keeping Issei in his periphery. They had all been surprised when Tekka offered herself up to help them get into the underground prison. It was clear she didn't care about saving Ori's life, but maybe Cyrus' point about taking away Rizek's moment of triumph over his fate had struck her. "What's your read on the guard?" Tekka asked him when he was close enough to hear her. She was wrapped in gray fabric, her hair combed over her missing eye in a sweep of gold. He looked over her shoulder at the guard stationed outside the door Syra had told them to use. It was the same color as the wall, with an old-fashioned lock that took a metal key, probably buried in one of the guard's pockets. But Akos wasn't supposed to be figuring out the door. He was supposed to be figuring out the man. He was no more than 5 seasons Akos' senior, broad-shouldered and wearing earned armor. The heel of his hand was balanced on the handle of his current blade, which was sheathed at his hip. Capable, Akos guessed, and not easy to knock senseless.
"I could take him down, but not quietly," Akos said. "I'll probably get myself arrested."
"Well, we'll call that our backup plan," Issei said. "What about distraction?"
"Yeah, sure," Tekka folded her arms. "The man was hired to guard a secure door that leads to Rizek Noavek's secret underground prison, and his failure to do so will probably result in his execution, but he will definitely abandon his post just because you wave something shiny at him."
"Say secret underground prison a little louder, why don't you?" Issei said. Tekka snapped a reply, but Akos wasn't paying attention. Sizi was tugging his sleeve.
"Let me see your vials," she said. "I have an idea."
Akos kept a few vials with him wherever he went. Sleep elixir, calming tonic, and a blend for fortitude among them. He wasn't sure what Sizi needed, but he undid the strap holding the vials against his arm and handed the hard little packet to her. All the glass clinked together as she sorted through it, choosing the sleep elixir. She uncorked it, sniffed it.
"That's strong," she said.
Issei and Tekka were still bickering.
About what, he didn't know,
but he wasn't going to get between them unless they started throwing punches.
"It's useful for certain situations," Akos replied vaguely.
"Go buy me something to drink from that cart over there, would you?" Sizi said, nodding to the big shaded cart across the square. She sounded confident enough so he didn't ask questions. He slipped through the crowd, sweat curling over the back of his neck. Like Tekka, he wore a gray robe over his armor, which didn't exactly make him inconspicuous. He was still the tallest person in sight, but made him look a little less like the person who had rescued Syra Noavek from the amphitheater the day before. The cart was sagging into its wheels, and so lopsided Akos wondered how all the mugs, full of some kind of rich, spicy drink from Othir that lifted a person's spirits, if the shouts of the seller were to be believed, didn't just slide off and break on the street. The Othirian man named a price in broken Shotet, and Akos tossed him a coin. Syra had left a stash of money in their quarters on the sojourn ship, opening it to him without ceremony one morning as she was cleaning her teeth, and he kept some of it, just in case. He carried the hot mug, which was tiny in his hand, over to Sizi, who dumped the vial of sleep elixir in it and sauntered over to the guard, without a word of explanation.
"I doubt he speaks Thuvazit," Tekka said.
Sizi's posture relaxed, and a smile spread over her face as she greeted the guard. At first the man looked like he would yell at her, but then he got that sleepy look, the same one both Jorek and Geo had given Sizi yesterday.
"She could be speaking Ogryn," he said. "It wouldn't matter."
He'd seen the effects of Sizi's gift before, but only when she wasn't really trying. He had no idea how potent the effect would be when she actually put effort into it. The guard was leaning back against the amphitheater wall, a little smile curling his lips, and when she offered him the mug, he cradled it in both hands and sipped. Akos hustled through the crowd, quick. If the guard was going to topple, he wanted it to happen as discreetly as possible, and sure enough, by the time he made it to his sister's side, the guard was swaying on his feet, the rest of the Othirian drink splashing on the packed dirt. Akos caught him by the shoulders and lowered him to the ground, slow. Tekka was already crouched over the man's body, searching his pockets. She turned up the key quickly, checked over her shoulder, and crammed it into the lock.
"Okay," Issei said to Sizi. "That was downright alarming."
Sizi just grinned. Akos dragged the sleeping guard over to the side next to the building, then ran to join the others in the open doorway. The maintenance tunnel beyond smelled like hot trash and mildew, and the odor sent a sharp feeling into his gut, like a needle for some reason. The air felt thick, like there was too much moisture in it. Tekka locked the door behind her and pocketed the key. Now that they were in, there was no bickering, no joking, no improvising. It was quiet in the maintenance tunnel except for a faraway dripping sound. And it was worse not being able to hear the crowd outside or the cheers from the arena above, not knowing if Syra had made it in, if she had made her challenge already, or if they would ever get out with Ori in tow. This tunnel felt less like a basement now, and more like a tomb.
"Syra said to move toward the center," Issei said softly. "She didn't remember the path exactly. Said she was out of it when she was taken here last."
But Syra wasn't the only person who had been here. Akos closed his eyes, thinking back to the night when Voss had wrestled him from his bed after a few days' starvation. He didn't know how long exactly, just that his door was locked and nobody would explain to him what was going on, and his stomach had ached for hours on end, and then stopped aching, like it had given up. Voss had gotten a few good hits in the hallway, then tossed him in a floater and flew him here, to this tunnel, to this mildew trash smell and this particular darkness.
"I remember," he said,
and he slipped past Issei so he could take the lead. He was still sweating, so he unfastened the heavy fabric covering his armor and tossed it aside. This path was hazy in his memories, and the last thing he wanted to do was go back to that time, when everything had ached and he had felt so weak he could hardly stand. Aija had met him and Voss at the back door, and he had curled his fingers around the armor that covered Akos' shoulder. For a tick it had felt comforting, like his brother was trying to steady him. And then Aija had dragged him to the prison, to be tortured. Akos gritted his teeth, squeezed his knife, and kept going. When he rounded the first corner, saw the first guard in his path, he didn't even think, he just erupted. Slammed the shorter, broader man into the wall, using his chin to drive his skull into the stone. A knife scraped Akos' armor, and a tongue of fire issued from the palm of the guard's hand, put out immediately by Akos' touch. Akos slammed the guard's head back again and again until his eyes rolled back and he slumped. A chill passed over Akos, his hair standing on end. He didn't check if the man was dead. He didn't want to know. He did glance at Sisi. Her mouth was twisted with disgust.
"Well," Issei said. Chirped, really. "That was effective."
"Yep," Tekka said, and she stepped right on the guard's leg as she kept walking down the next hallway.
"Whoever we run into here is a Noavek loyalist, Karaseth. Not worth crying over." "Do you see tears on my face?" he said, trying for some of Syra's bravado and falling short when his voice cracked a little. Still, he kept walking. He couldn't worry about Sisi's opinion of him. Not down here. A few more turns and Akos wasn't sweating anymore. He was shivering. The hallways all looked the same. Uneven stone floor. Dusty stone wall. Low stone ceiling. Whenever they stepped down, Akos had to duck so he wouldn't scrape his head. The smell of trash was gone, but the mildew was back in force, choking him. He remembered staring at the side of Aija's head as his brother yanked him forward through these passages, noticing that Aija had cut his hair short, just like Rizek. "I can't watch you destroy yourself for someone who doesn't want to be saved," Syra had said the night before. He had shown her just how deep his insanity ran, and she had refused to go along with it. It was hard to hold it against her, except he did. Had to. The door up ahead didn't look right in its stone and wood frame. It was made of black glass, opaque, and the locking mechanism was on the side, a keypad. Syra had given them a list of combination options. All of them, she said, related to their mother in some way. Birthday, death day, anniversary, lucky numbers.
Akko still couldn't see Rizek as a person who cared about his mother enough to lock his doors with her birthday. But instead of trying even one of the combinations, Tekka just started unscrewing the plate that covered the keypad. Her screwdriver was as delicate as a needle, polished and clean. She moved it like it was a sixth finger, popped the cover off the keypad and set it down, then pinched one of the wires under it, eyes shut. Tekka? There were footsteps coming from behind them somewhere.
Shut up,
she snapped, pinching a different wire. She smiled a little. Ah, she said, and it was clear she wasn't talking to them.
I see.
Okay then, come along. All the lights went out except the emergency light above, which shone down on them from the corner, so bright it left spots on Akos's eyelids. The glass door sprang open, revealing the glass floor that Akos remembered from his very worst memory. His brother forcing him to his knees in front of Syra Noavec. The pale emergency lights glowed in the floor in the prison hallway, dividing it into grids. Issei sprinted through the doorway and ran right down the middle of the hallway, looking left and right every time she reached a new cell. Akos went in after her, scanning the space, but feeling separate from it at the same time. Issei was running back now, and he knew what she was going to say before she said it. Somehow he felt like he'd known it all along, since he watched his mother flip that button in her fingers, since he realized how easy it would be for Sifa to manipulate them into the future she wanted, no matter the cost.
She's not here,
Issei said. Since he'd known her, she'd always been in total control, hadn't even broken down when she found out Ori was kidnapped, had never faltered, not even once, and now she was almost shrieking, frantic.
She's not here! Ori's not here!
He blinked, slow, like all the air around his head had turned to syrup. All the cells were empty. Ori was gone.
Chapter 35. Syra. After the double doors to the amphitheater opened, I knew it was time for me to move. I looked at Akos one last time, noting the red stain on his fingertips from preparing hushflower blends the night before, and the white line along his jaw where he had been scarred, and the natural gathering between his eyebrows that gave him an expression of perpetual concern. Then I slipped between the two people standing in front of me and stepped into the pack of soldiers who were about to receive their honor from my brother. By the time one of them noticed me walking among them, we were inside the yawning tunnel to the amphitheater floor. But I had drawn my current blade, so I wasn't concerned.
Hey! One of the soldiers snapped. You're not supposed to—
I seized him by the elbow and drew him close, touching the point of my knife to the bottom edge of his armor, right above his hip. I pressed it just enough for him to feel the sting of the point.
Let me walk in, I told him, loud enough for the others to hear. I'll let him go as soon as we're inside.
Is that? One of the others asked, leaning close to see my face. I didn't answer. Keeping my hand on his armor, not his skin, I pressed my captive soldier toward the end of the tunnel. None of the others moved to help him, and I credited my reputation for that. My reputation, and the ropes of shadow currently wrapped around my throat and wrists. I squinted into the bright light at the end of the passageway, and the roar of a huge crowd filled my ears. The big, heavy doors closed behind me and locked, leaving only my hostage and me on the arena floor. The other soldiers had stayed back. Above us, the force field buzzed. It smelled sour as salt fruit, and familiar as the dust that rose into the air with every footstep I took. I had bled here. I had made others bleed here. Rizek was on a wide platform, halfway up the stadium's side. An amplifier swooped over his head and hovered. His mouth was open, like he had been ready to speak. But now all he could do was stare at me.
I shoved my hostage soldier aside, sheathed my current blade, and pushed away the hood that shaded my face. It took Rizek only a moment to put on a mocking smile.
Well, look at this. Syra Noavec? Back so soon? Did you miss us? Or is this how disgraced Chotet commits suicide?
A chorus of laughter came from the crowd. The stadium was full of his most loyal supporters, the healthiest and wealthiest and best-fed people in Chotet. They would laugh at anything that resembled a joke. One of the amplifiers, controlled by remote by someone in the amphitheater, floated over my head to catch my response. I watched it bob up and down like a swallow. I didn't have much time before he sent someone after me. I had to be direct. I removed each of my gloves in turn and unbuttoned the heavy cloak that made me sweat. Beneath it, I wore my armor. My arms were bare, and a layer of makeup, applied by Tekka that morning, disguised the bruises on my face, making it look like I had healed overnight. The silver skin on my throat and head shone. It itched in earnest now as it knitted together with my scalp. If my body ached, it didn't mention it. I was on Akos's painkiller, but it was adrenaline that really made me separate from my pain now.
"I'm here to challenge you to the arena," I said.
There was a smattering of laughter from the crowd, like they weren't sure if it was expected of them. Rizek was certainly not laughing.
"I never knew you to be so theatrical," Rizek said at last.
His face was sweaty. He wiped his upper lip with the back of his hand.
"Marching in here with a hostage to make an attempt on your brother's life is, well, just as cruel as we have come to expect from you, I suppose. No crueler than having your sister beaten to death and recording it so everyone can watch," I said.
"You are not my sister," Rizek said.
"You're my mother's murderer."
"Then come down here and avenge her," I said hotly.
The amphitheater was full of mutters again. Noise poured back into it like water into a glass.
"You don't deny killing her," Rizek said.
I couldn't even pretend to deny it. Even after all this time, the memory was close to me. I had been yelling at her at the time, throwing a tantrum.
"I don't want to go to another doctor! I won't!"
I had grabbed her arm and shoved the pain at her like a child thrusting a plate of unwanted food away. But I had pushed too hard, and she had fallen at my feet. What I most remembered were her hands, folded over her stomach. So elegant, so perfect, even in death.
"I am not here to trade accusations with you," I said. "I am here to do what I should have done seasons ago. Fight me in the arena."
I drew my knife and held it out from my side. "And before you tell me that I don't have the rank to make such a challenge, let me point out how convenient that is." Rizek's jaw was set. When we were young, he had lost a tooth because he ground them in his sleep. It had fractured from the force, and its replacement was capped with metal. Sometimes I saw it glinting when he spoke, a reminder of the pressure that had created the man standing in front of me. I went on.
"You stripped me of my rank so no one could ever see for themselves that I am stronger than you. Now you hide behind your throne like a cowering child and call it law."
I tilted my head.
"But no one can quite forget your fate, can they? To fall to the family Benazit?"
I smiled.
"Refusing to fight me just confirms what everyone suspects about you, that you are weak."
I heard low whispers in the crowd. No one had declared Rizek's fate so baldly, so publicly, without suffering the consequences. The last one who had tried had been Tekka's mother on the Sojourn ship's intercom, and now she was dead. The soldiers by the doors shifted,
waiting for the order to kill me. But it didn't come. All that came was Rizek's smile, showing teeth. It was not the smile of someone who was squirming.
"All right, little Syra. I'll spar with you," he said. "Since that seems to be the only behavior that makes sense to you."
I couldn't let him unsettle me, but he was doing well. The smile had chilled me. It made the current shadows race around my arms and throat, my forever adornments. Always denser, faster, when my brother cued them with his voice.
"Yes, I will execute this traitor myself," he said. "Clear a path."
I knew his smile and what it disguised. He had a plan, but hopefully mine was better.
Rizek descended to the arena floor slowly and with grace, walking the path the crowd made for him, pausing at the barrier so a servant could check the tension of his armor straps and the sharpness of his current blades. In an honest fight, I would beat Rizek within minutes. My father had taught Rizek the art of cruelty, and my mother had taught him political scheming, but everyone had left me alone to my own studies. My isolation had made me his superior in combat. Rizek knew that, so he would never make this an honest fight. That meant I didn't know what weapon he was really holding. He was taking his time on his way to the arena, which meant there was likely something he was waiting for. He didn't intend to actually fight me, obviously, just as I didn't intend to fight him. If all was going according to plan, and Ima had slipped the contents of the vial into the calming tonic he drank with his breakfast, the ice flowers were already swimming through his body. The timing would not be exact. That depended on the person. I would have to be ready for the potion to surprise me, or fail entirely.
"You're dawdling," I said, hoping that calling him out would speed him up. "What is it you're waiting for?" "I am waiting for the right blade," Rizek said, and he dropped down to the arena floor.
Dust rose up in a cloud around his feet. He rolled up his left sleeve, baring his kill marks. He had run out of space on his arm and started a second row next to the first, near his elbow. He claimed every kill that he ordered as his own, even if he himself had not brought about the death. Rizek drew his current blade slowly, and as he raised his arm, the crowd around us exploded into cheers. Their roar clouded my thoughts. I couldn't breathe. He didn't look pale and unfocused, like he had actually consumed the poison. He looked, if anything, more focused than ever. I wanted to run at him with blade extended, like an arrow released from a bow, a transport vessel breaking through the atmosphere. But I didn't. And neither did he. We both stood in the arena, waiting.
"What are you waiting for, sister?" Rizek said. "Have you lost your nerve?"
"No," I said. "I'm waiting for the poison you swallowed this morning to settle in."
A gasp rattled through the crowd, and for once, for the first time, Rizek's face went slack with shock. I had finally truly surprised him.
"All my life you've told me I have nothing to offer but the power that lives in my body," I said. "But I am not an instrument of torture and execution. I am the only person who knows the real Rizek Noavek."
I stepped toward him.
"I know how you fear pain more than anything else in this world. I know that you gathered these people here today not to celebrate a successful scavenge, but to witness the murder of Orieva Benazit."
I sheathed my blade. I held my hands out to my sides so the crowd could see that they were empty.
"And the most important thing I know, Rizek, is that you can't bear to kill someone unless you drug yourself first.
which is why I poisoned your calming tonic this morning.
Rizek touched his stomach as if he could feel the hush flower eating away at his guts through his armor.
You made a mistake, valuing me only for my current gift and my skill with a knife, I said.
And for once, I believed it.
Chapter 36, Akos. The air in the underground prison was cool, but Akos knew that wasn't why Issa was trembling as she said,
Your mother said Ori would be here.
There has to be a mistake, Zizi said softly. Something she didn't see. Akos was pretty sure there was no mistake, but he wasn't about to share that now. They had to find Ori. If she wasn't in the prison, she had to be closer to the amphitheater, maybe above them in the arena, or on the platform where Rizek had cut into his own sister.
We're wasting time. We need to go upstairs and find her, he said, surprised by how forceful his own voice sounded. Now.
Apparently his voice had broken through Issei's panic. She took a deep breath and turned toward the door, where the distant footsteps of a few ticks ago had resolved into the menacing form of Vas Kuzar.
Sarukta. Kereseth. Ah, Benazit.
Vas said, looking at Issei with a little tilt to his mouth.
Not as pretty as your twin, I have to say. Is that scar from a Shotet blade by any chance?
Benazit? Tekka said, staring at Issei.
As in...
Issei nodded. Zizi had backed up against the wall of one of the cells, her hands flat against the glass. Akos wondered if his sister felt like she was standing in their living room again, watching Vas Kuzar murder their dad. That was how he had felt the first few times he saw Vas after the kidnapping. Like everything was unraveling inside him at once. He didn't feel that way anymore. Vas was empty-eyed as always. It had been disappointing to figure out that Vas was so empty of wrath, numb inside as well as outside. It was easier to think of him as pure evil, but the truth was, he was just a pet, doing his master's bidding. The memory of Akos's dad's death surfaced, his broken skin, the rich color of his blood, like the current stream above them, the bloody blade that Vas had wiped on a pant leg as he left the house. The man with the polished Shotet armor and golden brown eyes who couldn't feel pain. Unless Akos touched him. He didn't bother to reason with Vas. It was a waste of time. Akos just started toward him, his boots scraping the grit they had tracked onto the glass floor. Vas's eyes looked even colder, despite being such a warm shade of hazel, because of the lights coming from beneath him. Akos had the heart of prey. He wanted to run, or at least keep space between them, but he made himself press against that space, breathed open-mouthed, with flared nose, never breathing enough. Vas lunged and Akos let himself be prey. Then he sprang away. Not fast enough. Vas's knife scraped his armor. Akos winced at the sound, turning again to face him. He would let Vas get a few close calls in, let him get cocky. Cocky meant sloppy, and sloppy meant Akos might live. Vas's eyes were like stamped metal, his arms were like twisted rope. He lunged again, but instead of trying to stab Akos, he grabbed his arm with his free hand and slammed him hard against the cell wall. Akos's head snapped back, smacking into the glass. He saw bursts of color, and the glow of the floor against the flat ceiling. Vas's hand was clamped around him, stern enough to bruise, and close enough to grab. Akos seized him before he could try to stab again, pressing his knife arm back as hard as he could muster. Vas's eyes went wide, startled by his touch, in pain maybe. Akos tried to slam his forehead into Vas's nose, but he just tossed Akos aside. Akos fell. The grit they had tracked in clung to his arms,
He watched Tekka dragging Issei and Sizi away, one hand on each arm. He felt relief, even as blood or sweat tickled the back of his neck. He wasn't sure which. His head throbbed from the impact with the wall.